This is Web Crawler with Andrew Hawthorne. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Web Crawler with Andrew Hawthorne on the VOCM Radio Network.
If the internet is known for one thing, it's probably funny animal videos. And it's just the bread and butter of social media out there. Clicks and shares abound. They say pictures say 1,000 words, but they don't always tell the whole story. Recently, a viral video for a movie about loving dogs, A Dog's Purpose, went all over the place online, showing a behind-the-scenes clip of a stunt dog being forced, seemingly terrified, into a river to perform a stunt. This blew up online with a lot of outrage, but what does it all mean? With me today is local trainer from Dynamic Canines, Rose Brown. Hello, Rose.
Hi, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
No, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
So we're talking about this video from A Dog's Purpose, and, a lot of people are upset. We see a dog essentially really not wanting to go into some really rough water and being kind of forced to do that. From a trainer's point of view, what are you seeing when you watch this video?
Well, what I see when I watch the video, which was really heart-wrenching for me, was the pure panic and fear that the dog was exhibiting about trying to be forced into the water at that time. You could tell, he was exhibiting it. He was trying to get away. He kept crawling up the side of, the pool. And a few times, the trainer keeps kind of bringing him back, or the handler, and trying to keep him there, but you could tell just by looking at his body language and tail talk that was the last place he wanted to go at that time.
And is this the way this kind of stuff is usually done? Usually you see the disclaimer at the end of a movie that no animals were harmed, and you
right.
assume that it's all camera trickery and things like that. But are we just throwing dogs into rivers here, or what's going on?
Not necessarily. The American Humane Society has certainly stepped up to the plate over the last, number of decades in recognizing and working with the Screen Actors Guild on ensuring that cruelty isn't done to animals on the sets for training purposes. Unfortunately, in the past, horses have been killed making movies, and other animals have as well. And while their measures of safety have certainly stepped up to the plate and they're on site, this is also still a contractual position that the American Humane Society does. And while they're measuring, signs for physical harm, it needs to be taken to the next level of looking and recognizing the emotional distress and the emotional harm that can come as a result of forcing a dog or any other animal to do something for the sake of making a movie.
Yeah, and now the American Humane Society, as you said, they investigated the video and they came out and said after, it was misleadingly edited, the dog was not actually harmed. Does that change
right.
this at all, or is that beside the point?
Well, let's look at the definition of harm. From their perspective, they gave the dog a physical examination. He was looked at by a vet. And no, absolutely, he wasn't hurt physically. What they failed to look at was the emotional harm in this situation, because even though, two parts of the video certainly seem to have been edited together, I'm not disputing that. I'm not into video production. What I am talking about was dogs don't lie. It's pretty basic. Unlike humans, we can manipulate and try to change our body positions, to either mask fear, show fear, or be braver than what we appear to be on the inside. But with animals, they don't have that capability to be able to I'm just going to fake being afraid right now to get out of doing this. That's the thing about animal behavior. It's pretty black and white. So their body language is very honest and straightforward in that time. And while the dog was may not have been physically harmed, he was certainly distressed and panicked and emotionally harmed in that scene there at that time.
Now, when you talk about emotional harm, you know, if you talked about a person, then you would either talk about, you know, this person is really bothered and they're going to need an apology, or they're going to need to, you know, maybe just get over it. Or maybe you're talking about somebody who's been traumatized by an event. What does that mean in animal terms, that this dog has been emotionally harmed?
Right. So when we're looking at animal behavior, and certainly lots of new information and research and scientific background-based evidence has come out in recent years, with respect to behavior modification and behavioral responses and emotional distress in dogs, and not just dogs, but other animals as well, but we're speaking to the context of canines here. And with emotional trauma such as that, it may seem okay in that moment in time that the dog recovered once the scene or the event was over with. But we know from research that these can have long-lasting term impacts, so that if the dog were presented in either the same situation or a similar situation again, that the fear response coming from the dog is going to be either the same or escalates over time. So when we're looking at emotionals, no, we can't apologize to the dog to change it. From our perspective with behavior modification, we would actually have to go back and start implementing a behavior modification program to ensure that the dog was set up for success to be able to learn to counter condition that automatic fear response that comes from within, and by setting up environments and context to have it at the least stressful situation as possible for the dog. So it's called counter conditioning. And usually this is done at a process, and depending on the situation and the dog or the aspect that it pertains to, it can be as simple as, you know, helping them overcome it in a very short amount of time. For some dogs, it will take quite a length of time, you know, years for them to overcome those fears.
Wow. How could this have been done? You know, I'm a Hollywood producer, and I'm like, you know, I need this scene. A dog goes into a river and rescues a kid. What's a better way to have done this? Was it the technical aspect? Was it just that the water was too quick and enough to scare the dog? Or was there something different with the training that should have been managed here?
Well, you know, and that's a great question, because it highlights a couple of points. You know, the American Humane Society had, you know, come out and said that the dog had been picked for his love of the water, and they'd spent 6 weeks, training him and conditioning for the water scenes. However, if the training and the context changed pertaining to that situation, because saying that a dog was positively reinforced, what was their basis for positive reinforcement? Unfortunately, positive reinforcement can be as minimal as just petting or praising the dog verbally for doing a good job. That qualifies as positive reinforcement. And being also then taken into account of that, you need to recognize that training, you know, a dog for whether it's a water scene or learning to walk on a loose leash, this takes time to generalize. And by generalize, I mean that you would set those scenes up and those contexts up in many different situations. So something could have changed that day for the dog. The dog may have very well performed that behavior and got into a raging, quote-unquote, river scene the day before, but something else happened in that moment for the dog that caused him to panic and stress. It could have been, you know, the addition of the extra people on set, the film crew, you know, the crowds might have scared him a little bit more. It could have been that they didn't have the water turned up as high in their previous training. It could be a different myriad of contexts. So without knowing exactly what their whole training plan encountered, we can't get inside the dog's head to know specifically what caused him to be stressed at that moment in time.
Do you think that laws and regulations and maybe the Humane Association or society need to be changed to recognize more of this aspect? Or are the existing laws okay and maybe some practices need to change?
Well, they've done, like I said, they've done a great job of being able to implement safety measures, and they have people on site. What I think, and I'm hoping that, you know, that out of every situation that at least we can learn something from a lesson, that they pay more attention to their monitoring of the emotional side and the signs of stress, and intervene earlier and step up to the plate and stop on behalf of that dog, because you have to realize that if they're going to undertake the monitoring of whether it's using horses, cats, dogs, or whatever in any film, that they also need to be well versed in being able to read the body language of that specific animal and being able to recognize that emotional distress is also just as key as ensuring that there's no physical harm taking place at the same time.
Do you think that the online outrage and the reaction of this was justified? You know, they canceled advertising and they canceled screenings, but still, like, reviews of the movie seemed pretty positive in the long run and dog positive, and it did do well in other countries. Was it a good reaction for people to be so angry about this?
I think it highlights the change in our society, especially from my position as a modern trainer who specializes in behavior modification, that even though you know, the rest of the movie might have been fine, really, are we still going to accept a movie that was about you know, really being with a dog and what a dog's purpose is, that it's okay that, you know, whether it was 40 seconds or 50 seconds of distress, that because, you know, everything else looked okay, that is going to be acceptable. Really, we really have to bring the standards up within to society to recognize that it's just because it seemed okay at the end, there's still glitches in the process to get there. And it really is not acceptable at any cost for human entertainment, because that's what it comes down to. This was about a dog, but it's for human entertainment. That what bar level are we going to accept that, oh, it's okay that he was distressed for that. He was fine after. Really? Is that the level that we want to keep it to? So I think the outrage really also helped highlight more awareness that it's not acceptable to make a dog do something when they're emotionally distressed, regardless of whether it's on a movie set, in a training class, in a veterinarian office, or in a groomer's office. Just because you want to make them at that point in time do something, you're failing to respect the response of that animal with respect to their emotions.
You know, this isn't the first controversy of this kind, obviously. And there's
absolutely
been a lot
not.
There's been a lot of past controversy on viral videos and movies. You know, you had Milo and Otis back in the 80s or 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And recent viral videos showing behavior from sloths and particularly slow loras, those really cute fuzzy things with giant eyes you see online.
Yeah.
Where it looks very cute, but what you're missing is that this is a fear response for a sloth. And that slow loris, you know, had its teeth removed, and that's why it's doing this cute-looking thing.
Absolutely.
And there's this dark side to this. What should people be aware of when looking at seemingly cute dog videos online, that maybe there's something else going on here?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of stuff that does become, you know, online, you know, we see cute dogs and kids videos, and we see, oh, the dog who barks at, you know, a fire hydrant, everybody laughs because it's so funny. What we're not recognizing is that they're displaying fear and emotional response. So what we lack in understanding is a good overview of being able to read canine body language. And what we often mistaken for something that's cute that we can laugh at, oftentimes the dog is suffering based in panic and fear. And while people are really good at recognizing when a dog is very happy or when a dog is extremely scared, it's all of these subtle communication and signs from them that we're missing in between. And so people need to become more aware. And there's lots of good information out there, you know, today with books, resources, and videos on how to read canine body language. What I find ironic is that we'll bring dogs into our homes and into our lives, and we expect them to learn our language, which is foreign to them. But we don't take that time to learn their language and give them that same amount of respect that we expect them to give to us.
Web Trawler with Andrew Hawthorne. We'll be right back.
I'm speaking with Rose Brown from Dynamic Canines. You do a lot of different work at Dynamic Canines with animals in the community here in St. John's. Can you tell me a bit about the kind of things that you do?
All right. So, you know, we offer basic training, you know, for people who want to, you know, just do our standard let's help our dogs learn to live with humans training. So our basic manners would be typically, you know, teaching a dog to sit down, come on calls, loose leash walking, being able to settle into your home. And we also do our Puppy Start Right socialization classes. We're the only ones offering this accredited course here within the St. John's area. And this focuses on early socialization in a safe environment for puppies, beginning as early as age 8 weeks of age, because it is recognized now that the number one reason that dogs are put down each year is due to behavioral problems. And understanding that that socialization window and being exposed to new and novel things, different situations, peoples, and environments, there is a set window period when dogs are most open to learning those new experiences between the ages of 8 and 12 weeks so that we can set them up to be more behaviorally competent as they continue to live with us through the years and are more acceptable and open to all of these experiences. I also offer other specialized classes too as well, where we focus on specific behaviors or building on to our manner situations, as well behavior modification and consultations dealing with behavior issues in dogs and puppies that are of concern and can't be addressed in a classroom environment. So whether it's something as simple as helping somebody with house training or more complicated cases with behavior modification, whether it's, you know, to do with fear humans, reactivity towards humans or towards children, where the dog is afraid and fearful and becomes aggressive in those situations, leash aggression, separation anxiety, the list goes on and on. But because we're approaching it from a behavior modification point of view, many of these behavior cases can be worked out successfully once we understand the underlying root cause of what's causing the behavior in that specific dog.
And, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of trainers and philosophies out there. And I think some of what you do is very different from the popular perception of how dogs are trained that people could get off of TV. How is it different, the kind of positive reinforcement that you're doing?
Yeah, again, a great question. Unfortunately, the dog training industry is not regulated. So anybody can call themselves a trainer, and there is no set standards, even within the industry, for anyone to abide by. So unfortunately, a lot of the training methods that still exist today actually predate the Second World War, which we know is kind of ancient, and because of scientific research and behavior and scientific-based methods of training, a lot of we can move forward with it. But unfortunately, there's oftentimes a muddied water version of that, in that, you know, people will say they're positive reinforcement trainers. And again, back to my earlier statement, you can be a positive reinforcement trainer only if you praise the dog. That doesn't mean that you're not also using corrections and punishment to make the dog do something. The key difference in my training method and being a Karen Pryor certified training partner is that we don't use any corrections in teaching a dog, nor do we ever need to use them if we're setting the dog up successfully to learn in the environment, whether it's a classroom or at home, and understanding that we're teaching a behavior. Making a dog do something is not the same as giving the dog the choice to do something on their own. And with my certification with the Karen Pryor Academy, there's accountability. So there is actually a code of ethics and a standard that we voluntarily put ourselves in through to be submitted to, in the fact that if I go against any of the abiding regulations within my certification through the Karen Pryor Academy, you can call up and you can actually report me, and I'll be held accountable, and I'm stripped essentially of my title, and rightfully so, because what we undertake is to take based on training that's done from the dog's behavior and the dog's point of view, not from the human end of the leash, and helping people understand what canine behavior really is from their aspect. So we don't, because we know this information and because we know these different studies into behavior modification and background and research, we don't need to use force anymore to teach a dog to do something. And to be quite honest with you, you know, the use of leashes and everything in our classes really is just for safety purposes to keep the dog from going towards the other dogs. We actually can train hands off. We don't need to use it with marker-based training. In my case, we use a clicker, but we can also use verbal markers in that I catch the dog doing right. Most training methods that still exist today wait for the dog to do something wrong and then correct the dog for doing it. We focus on catching the dog doing right, and because we know that dogs will repeat a behavior that's reinforcing to them, if we reinforce the desired behaviors that we want, those old behaviors fade away because the new behaviors are more reinforcing and reward-based for them.
So that is the basis of force-free training then, that you're not punishing the dog or forcing them to do something.
Right. So force-free training, again, it's hands-off manipulation. And by that, what I mean is I'm not forcing a dog to go into a sit by, you know, either using my foot to make them sit or forcing down on the back of their rump with my hand or popping up with the leash to make them go back into a sit, or giving corrections to make them walk by my side, or using aversive base collars, you know, prong collars or choke collars to make them do that. Unfortunately, again, over the last few years, because the industry isn't regulated, we try to help people understand and differentiate between, you know, positive reinforcement, and then so now we've come out and said, well, we're not using any force. However, unfortunately, marketing, people need to look beyond that and understand that, you know, there's still people who are calling themselves positive reinforcement trainers, and technically they're right if they're using praise. So they're not lying per se, but then it's the same thing, you know, people will call themselves force-free and fear-free trainers, and again, but they are using it. They are using corrections. So it really is, unfortunately, for the average owner, trying to seek out the difference between, say, my training class versus another training class within the area of how to tell the difference between the two. And truly, the best that I can recommend for people to understand the difference is, you know, go and observe a class. We willingly and welcome people come in to audit our class so they can really see that, no, we're not using force or fear when we're training our dogs, because it can be manipulated, and as we know, marketing makes things stand out and look really good on the outside, but you just got to do a little bit further digging. And I really hope, over the last number of years here, that I have seen a change within the community, and it's great. People are asking and recognizing that we don't need to use this. So they're looking beyond, for lack of a better word, the buzzwords and the popular names, you know, on TV shows and that, to really do their own research.
Do you have any tips for folks at home with their dogs? And you've dealt with dogs all over from tiny chihuahuas to, you know, big old pit bulls and things. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things are some general tips for pet owners?
Well, one of my favorite things is to help people to understand, to focus on the good. Generally, you know, oftentimes when people contact me and say, I have a great dog, but there's always a but. So I often feel like maybe we should call all of our dogs Fido butt, in that, you know, they don't understand some of the time some of the behaviors that their dogs are doing are being reinforced without them even being aware of it. So the focus is not, people will think, oh, I'm not giving the dog a treat or a toy for doing it, but reinforcement is not about what we classify as a treat or a toy. It's about the consequence for the dog. So really trying to figure out, looking at the behavior from the dog's point of view and saying, what am I getting out of this? You know, and then being able to understand, being able to like, well, how can I change this so that it's not as reinforcing to the dog? And being able to look at, okay, so the dog who barks at the person entering into the house scares that person from approaching, the dog is being reinforced because barking works to keep the scary thing away. Whereas a dog that's learning, every time I come see you, I get a, you know, a treat or a cookie or something from you, then I'm helping that dog learn that, hey, people are friendly, so they want to approach instead of bark. But if people could just start looking at what their dog is doing good, the majority of the time our dogs really are well behaved. And we just have a tendency not to focus on that. We also have a tendency as a society in general to focus on more of the negative associations for anything and react as opposed to be proactive, you know. And the thing about it is once you learn how to change your mindset of like, hey, I'm going to catch my dog doing this, being good, and focus on that, it does help start to change the context and understanding their viewpoint instead of always looking at the leash on our end. We need to look at it from their end of it. So number one thing is start looking for the good in your dog. Look for trainers that really do only use, you know, positive training methods without the use of, you know, aversive collars or corrections. And do your homework. Investigate your trainer. Ask for their resumes. Ask for their training background to see what they've done. Because modern dog trainers, we're always continuing with our education. It's not acceptable anymore that what I learned 5 years ago is still may or may not be in the same context today. We willingly want to continue our education just like any other designated profession. So, you know, and look beyond the self-proclamations because, again, marketing is a key factor, and we just want to go a little bit further. So if you were looking for a teacher for your child, you know, you'd want to make sure that they have credentials and the proper education, and it should be no different if you're looking for a trainer for your dog.
How can people find you if they'd like to learn more about what you're talking about here, Rose?
Yeah, they can find me on my website at dynamiccanines.ca, which has a list of the services in that we provide and are ongoing. We also have a Facebook page, too, that they can check out as well. And if they need any other information, they can contact me directly to their website. And we look forward to hearing from prospective clients.
And you can find me at Hawthorne Andrew J, and I can't help you train a dog at all, but I can definitely point you towards a good hot dog. So there's that. Thanks for coming on the show
today,
Rose.
Hot dogs are good, and no animal was harmed in the making of your hot dog, I'm sure.
No, there's no animal in there whatsoever. Thank you very much for coming on. Take care, folks.
This has been Web Trawler with Andrew Hawthorne on the VOCM Radio Network.